You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thank you so much for joining us, however you may be listening. If you like the show, please pass it along. We appreciate you listening, and we appreciate you telling a friend about the little show that we have here. My name is Drew.
Our tiny little show.
My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the Reformation to my Spanish Inquisition, my dear friend, Andy.
Hey, man. How's things?
Things are good. This is apparently the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, Andy.
I thought you were going to say of this show. I'm just going to say you were very wrong.
Nope, we have not been doing this for half a millennium, but it only feels like that. Our silent partner, Nate, is joining us, as he does each week, to make the sound happen. Andy, firmly into fall. It's happening. Fall is deep in us. And I'll tell you what, I'm ready for it. I'm leaning hard into fall.
Just sipping on some pumpkin-flavored garbage?
Pumpkin-flavored garbage, yeah. Everything smells like pumpkin. My underwear drawer smells like pumpkin. My rotten pumpkins smell like pumpkin.
Yeah.
All the breads I've been making are pumpkin breads.
Pumpkin-based breads, yeah.
This is also, Andy, our first Tuesday evening show in like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Could you tell a difference?
I could. It was weird. I was a little more prepared.
Were you?
Yeah.
You feel like you're a little fresher on a Tuesday than the ordinary Monday nights?
Yeah. Well, physically. Maybe not like mentally or like show-wise, but physically.
I resist mental preparation.
My body was more accepting of a Tuesday night show, turns out.
It is. It was a little bit easier. I'm ready for it tonight. I got a little more juice. And I hope that comes through because our guest tonight was Radio Hot Tub's very own Uncle Scotty. Scott Hammond was joining us. So for Portland residents, actually for any resident who's just interested in great rock music, Radio Hot Tub is Scott's kind of brainchild. He's been doing this for years here. It's internet radio, and they play nothing but Portland and Northwest music 24 hours a day.
Yeah, just a great way to find out about what's going on in Portland right now and what local music is happening and where to see them.
He describes it perfectly in this episode, so I will let him do the honors. We also play a little scenarios in stereo, have a good time with that, and listen to some excellent music. So you're all in for a real treat this week on Hot Garbage, and we hope you enjoy our conversation with Uncle Scotty.
So Nate and I got to go to a kindergarten ice cream social today down the street at the playground.
Really?
Yeah, for our kids.
Really weird sounding.
Our kids are in kindergarten together.
It sounds extra weird though.
Yeah.
Especially since they showed up without their kids.
We did, and I ate all the ice cream. I was like, "No, these three are for me. Yeah. They're for my kids, though. Give me extra sprinkles."
Scott, I want you to, if you can, give us sort of the thesis statement for Radio Hot Tub, because I think there are some of our listeners who, unfortunately, may not know about it. What's
a thesis statement?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it acts like I prepared this or something.
That's right.
That is a pretty
no.
Professional
I just you know expect you to be able to extemporaneously.
Holy crap! No. So the what is Radio Hot Tub?
Yeah,
that's a good way to say it.
Radio, right? There's the, Radio Hot Tub is a radio station that streams online. That also now shares some airspace with 90.3 Freeform Portland a couple hours a week, promoting local bands with the intention of not just playing the music of local bands, but giving information about where these bands are playing, who these bands are, and ideally getting a listening audience able to listen enough times where they start to hear songs and say, I'd like to go see that band. I love that song every time I hear it. That's how I used to get interested in going to see bands, was hear something on the radio. And it's like, I want to go see that live. So anyway, it's all about Portland bands. We've got about 250. When I say we, I mean me and my imaginary friends have
the royal
about, way. Yeah, about 250 local Portland bands on the playlist.
That's awesome. How do people go about submitting music to get on your playlist?
It's very difficult. There's a semen sample. There is a hazing.
Yeah, I figured.
but generally, it's a section.
It doesn't have to be their semen. It just has to be a sample.
A semen sample. Yeah. A semen sample. Could be from a friend, a grandmother, anybody.
Yeah, anybody. Anybody who's got some.
But it's very simple. Just radiohottub.com has all the information. All you do is submit. There's a little section on the end. The only thing we have to do is
enjoy it.
And beyond that, there is a form that says basically you understand we're not making any money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be unsigned. You're just doing this for promotion. That way, it doesn't cost me any money. The government's not going to come after me.
Right.
As mm-hmm. long as all we're doing is trying to promote. I'm not making any money. We're just trying to sell your songs for you, make you get you some listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I forget where we were going with that question.
Well, I'm curious.
Just like, do you have like a vetting system where you're like, nah, I don't like this. I'm not going to play this on my
show. There's some, but not much. In the beginning, as a matter of fact, I took on things that I said, well, maybe this isn't just for me, but I'd be willing to let people decide if they think this is worthy of staying on the air. So in the beginning, I was a little less picky because I'd only maybe had 15, 20 local bands in the beginning.
Right.
And I was playing a mix of classic rock. Because that's what it morphed out of. Radio Hot Tub was a classic rock that the classic rock stations don't play station that I had created after I'd lost a job in Canada. So I was at home and I just created this station. And it was doing okay, but it really wasn't getting an audience. And when I moved here, I immediately saw how much music there was. And I said, oh no, we're just going to. The mix was fun at first. And some of the bands enjoyed. He'd say, well, I came out of Deep Purple today, and then I heard my band, and it sounded great next to Deep Purple.
Yeah.
And there is something to it that I kind of liked. But eventually, I just talked to enough people, and I thought about myself anyway, and just said, really, the niche has to be that we just play radio, just local bands. That's it. But now it has become more stringent. I'm a little more picky. But most people that are sending stuff, it's been great. You know, and it's a variety. I just know what it can't be. It's supposed to be Portland rocks.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pretty wide net of what I call rock.
Yeah.
I consider it pretty liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if there may be a point where it's like, you know what? No, I just don't want to start making people think it's this kind of a station. So, but if we got heavy metal and we've got acoustic, you know, girls singing on a guitar. We've got industrial. We've got quirky, new wavy stuff. We've got overproduced, underproduced, punk. Bands that sound really tight together. Bands that sound a little sloppy. But in a way, they all sound pretty good together. Uh-huh. And I like the playlist on there, 250 bands.
That's a pretty deep playlist, is it? And you were talking about how this is really a promotional opportunity for these bands.
Yes.
And you want to give people some familiarity. So is it still programmed like a normal radio station where you're going to hear certain songs a couple of times in a day?
If you do the math on it, because it's 250 bands and many of those have 3 to 4 to 5 songs in rotation.
Sure.
So there's a lot of songs on there. I forget, it's 1,000 something. And if each song is 3 to 6 minutes and how many minutes in an hour, I think there's no way you're going to hear a repeat in a day.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty spread, and I'm not moving anything in or out. I mean, anytime we add more music, it's not like I'm removing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So it just spreads the time that you hear songs even more.
Oh man, that makes it kind of like a treasure hunt. So when you're listening to it, you're like, man, I can't wait to hear that song again.
Except
I believe there was radio on.
Except when I'm live.
Uh-huh.
And when I'm live and when I'm doing live shows, and hopefully you don't know, if you listen to RadioHotTub.com, some people really do not know when I'm live and when I'm not. I do go live quite a bit. There's little ways you can tell about things I talk about when I'm live and things I don't when I'm not. I do pre-record. So right now, if we turned in, you'd hear me talking 3 times this hour about various gigs, about where you can see the show, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in between that, it's whenever I'm live, sure, if somebody's listening and they've dropped me a note, hey, can you play, you know, King Black Acid? Yeah, sure, which song? Let me throw one in for you.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I have it, I'll play it. And I can play whatever I want, because right now, you know, well, at least on the internet station, on that station, there's no censorship at all.
What do you think?
There's some here. What's I've just that? Instituted a hard censorship rule of no more swearing on our show.
Yeah, well... good luck.
We're going to keep good the luck show enforcing squeaky it. Clean.
We are on a 3-week delay, so the FCC has plenty of time to catch us.
I've been called out as a nasty pervert on multiple episodes now.
Yeah, multiple consecutive episodes.
I'm I'm going full
pervert.
Yeah. that's the respectable thing to do.
Yeah.
I'm going
just
full
embrace
pervert.
It. Just lean in as I've grown Sandberg
into it in my
say.
Age. And it's okay.
I can't wait.
We'll get there. We'll get there. I've made a point of it. I'm curious just about what, in your opinion, what is unique about radio? What can radio do as a format in this sort of hyper digital age that other ways of sharing music just can't do?
Well, there it is. It's the easiest one. And it's still, it came a point where people started saying radio's dying, which is, and you know, and you watch it and say, yeah, it's sad. I've watched it decline quite a bit just in the time I was in it about 15 to 20 years. And I had some great times, and at the end, it was not so great.
Well, if you say radio's dying, though, it seems to me that it's just rock radio is dying. We've got like 7 hip-hop stations in Portland all playing basically the same stuff. We've got like maybe what, like NRK? That's about it for like modern rock. 105.1 plays like the poppy rock stuff, but that's about it. It's crazy.
Well, you've got a lot of stations. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. The question, I guess, was
the
what
stability.
Yeah, what is it worth against all these other mediums?
Exactly.
It's the accessibility. And I had a couple instances here in town where I was talking to bands about this kind of stuff, and they were saying, "Well, podcasts, and I don't listen to radio, and this and that." But the minute they find out they're going to be on any station, whether it's one of the many nonprofit, you know, local mm-hmm. stations we have, where someone has a 2-hour slot, and they say, "Hey, I'm going to play my friend's band today." They'll be pimping the thing out like, hey, we're going to be on the radio today. Tune in the radio. We're going to be on the radio.
Yeah, I see that a lot, too.
And that gives me hope. And again, no matter what they create, unless they're going to rip the towers down, the medium's there and easily accessible in a car, which is just one of those great things about it. You should be it's not something you have to try to find. It's very accessible. Now, they keep saying all this podcasting, you know, anything online is going to become as accessible as that. And they keep saying, you know, in car, pretty soon in the car, everybody's going to have internet radio, and that's when everybody's going to have the freedom, and it's going to be great.
Right.
And okay, I may go there. But until I see that day, I see those towers, I think radio is a fantastic medium, and it's easy to get, and there's lots of ways to get it.
Yeah, it's like usually like the base thing, like when every other way you can listen to music is broken, your radio still works. The tape player might be broken. CD player's fucked up. Tape player.
But you can always grab some airwaves.
Radio works.
The other thing I think is awesome about radio, I remember growing up, I would like tape things. I'd have a tape queued up.
Yeah,
so when a song came on the radio, I could make my own mixtapes, and I was always missing like the first like second and a half. Mm-hmm. But just like that reaction time. There is something sort of like cosmic about the connection of when you hear a song on the radio that you love, as if you found each other. It's not the same as you seeking it out. And it's not exactly like it found you, but you guys passed at this moment while you're, you know, waiting in line for a burger or something like that.
No, you're totally right, man. That's exactly it. And it became so too much of the stations have become so stringent and tight that freedom is gone. And that was really the only thing when they've been trying to save radio for years now. And the one thing they've overlooked is the most obvious, which is anybody can find this music anywhere they want. They don't need to come to your station to find this music. The only thing you have is personalities and a connection. That's all you have. And what they started trimming down personality, that's when radio started to die for me. So I think if you put personality back in radio, me or anybody who's passionate about what they're doing, could be any format, if you're into whatever format, passionate about it, sell it, people will know you're honest or not. People pick it up really quick.
Right.
And you'll gain listeners, and people will chime in. And now I've only been doing Freeform for, at the time, I don't know when you're going to air this, but at this time,
next
I've
only year, this time,
it'll be, it's been, I've done probably 6 shows at Freeform at this point. And every time I do a show, you see a slight little jump in listenership, and people jump chiming in. And I'm just finding people this way. And it's easy because someone's popping through there. Oh, I left it on 90.3. My friend had a show on last night at 1 a.m, went to bed. And the next day I happened to be on. And they're like, what's this? Oh, these are local bands. Oh, I've heard of that band. Oh, what's this? That's how you do it. It's just easy. It's not hard work.
What are the characteristics of a good radio personality? What do you think it is that people connect with that makes it work?
That's a hard one. That's a hard one because it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
But for me, it's always been I don't know if you guys remember Howard Stern. Are you old enough to remember Howard Stern?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Most people think of Howard Stern as this is my example of what I think personality was. I used to listen to a lot of radio morning shows growing up, rock shows, morning zoo, doing funny wacky stuff.
I grew up on Bob and Tom in Indianapolis.
We had Mark and Brian, and I believe Mark and Brian were here in Portland too, simulcast. But anyway, Howard Stern came along. And what most people think about Howard Stern is like, oh, he had strippers and lesbians and it was all this shock stuff, shock jock, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But as a listener, and it took me a while to gravitate to him, it took me about 2 or 3 months to start switching from Mark and Brian over to Howard Stern just to see what he was doing. And it was a slow switchover. But what got you is it was the reality of it and the truth of it.
He's the best interviewer on the radio.
Yeah,
all the
and just
time.
Whatever was, whoever was, he could interview the homeless guy on the street or some huge celebrity.
His bits were great.
And yeah, just the interaction between the group that he worked with was you felt you knew everybody in that room. Mm-hmm. And I used to get hooked into it where I couldn't get out of the car. I'd be having to go somewhere. I'm late for work. Oh, they're still talking about this. I can't go in. To me, that was personality. But there's more to it than that. And I'll tell you a quick story about a personality that I got a job at a radio station. Back in Kansas, I had to work in the Bible Belt of Kansas when I was getting my feet wet in radio. And I moved.
That's where they send you. It's boot camp.
Yeah. So that was my boot camp. It was. I always told him it was my boot camp. My boss used to laugh that he goes, you call this your boot camp?
And we call it Tornado Alley.
I totally said that. And it was a little town in Kansas. And they were looking for a new DJ. And I happened to have – my boss was like, nobody wants to move here. We're so happy you were willing to come here. I was from Los Angeles. They were like, we can't believe you moved here to this little town. I was like, I can't either.
Kind of a lateral move.
But I'm learning something here. It's a good job. Anyway, they didn't know who was going to move there. But I had met this kid, I was 21 years old, something. 2 days into moving to this place, I didn't know if I'm going to meet anybody at this place I would be able to relate to because I'm in the middle of my Bible Belt. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. This kid had an infectious laugh, super honest and funny, stoner dude, like probably one of the only stoner dudes out there in Kansas, right? Mm-hmm. So I got introduced to this guy, and I said, you know, this guy Keith had mentioned he would, you know, one day like to try to do radio. He worked at a lumberyard. So I said, would you be willing to let me train him on how to work the equipment? And we did. And long story short, within a few months, he was better than me in production room. Funny as hell. People were calling in on his show. He had this laugh. He was real. People grooved on him because he was like one of them. And he was
definitely the most interesting thing happening in Kansas.
Yeah. He created a career out of it for a while.
That's awesome.
Something happened eventually, but he went on and worked in some bigger markets. And to me, that's it. So I don't know if that answers the question.
No, I think it's interesting because I feel as if one of the criticisms is, you know, in my car, I still listen to radio. And at certain times I want more talk and at certain times I want more music. But there seems to be a complaint that the sort of the morning radio personality has gotten sort of homogenized, mm-hmm. where you tune in and everybody's trying to do exactly the same thing. So it's almost like they're skewing toward their own destruction by moving away from distinct personalities or points of view or consistency. Where does that come from? Is this just aversion to risk? Or
yes. Here's the joke about Howard Stern and how passionate I got about him as an inspiration. Was that in the end, when I got working in radio, after about three, I remember when I got started, I was too old. I mean, I was older than most. I started radio when I was in my 40s. And I was thinking, okay, maybe in a few years, Howard Stern will get bored of doing radio and I can move into one of these markets that he's opened up because as a morning show. That was my thought. It's a stupid plan, but it was how I thought I was getting into radio.
Well, you weren't too far up.
It kind of happened.
But if only you'd been David Lee Roth, you could have.
Yeah, right. But Howard did one thing. He didn't really do it, but he in turn created a bunch of program directors that did not want a trouble making, because you see all the trouble he caused for everybody. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he made them money, but it's not like you get to control these people. And this is a different, nobody wants that. And so they were making a point out of hire. And when they hired you, they were watching you and making sure. And I said, it used to be a little more laid back. I think Howard ruined it for everybody else. He got to be the one who could do all this. And you see some shows that still get away with some stuff, but not like that. He got away with some stuff.
Yeah. He didn't necessarily get away with it either.
Yeah, exactly. And it didn't matter because they kept wanting to buy him. I mean, he was a salesman, had, you know, so much business. What are you going to say? You know, it's like people are enjoying the show. I was. It's like when they do something crazy, you just be like, I got to listen to this.
I would listen to it every day at work and then watch the TV show on E.
That's where I caught on first, was on E.
Every once in a while you'd like catch it, the one you saw or listened to on the radio. It's
yeah.
crazy. It's yeah. cool. It was a cool connection. We'd be like, oh man, you can catch us in all these different ways now. And now we have podcasts.
And Scott, I want to talk about your kind of journey toward radio and where you're at right now, but I would love if you could play the familiar role of DJ and kick us off music-wise tonight.
All right, I can pick any one of the three that
pick
I brought
along.
Pick
any one of the three.
Okay,
dealer's
so
choice.
You gave me a very hard task here. You said pick three songs, and my first thought was like, wow, I got 250 bands. A lot of, I mean, I don't just like a top five. I've got a top 50 in this list. And I'm that I would love to just, okay. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to pick out of this list of bands? We could talk more maybe afterwards about what my criteria, we talk about criteria. I do have a criteria about what I think makes a great band.
Oh, I'd love to get into that.
So
we'll maybe use this as an example here.
There's a few little, you know, different things. The talent, the production and the show, the personalities. And sometimes it's just the room or just the people that come to the shows or where you saw it. And maybe the joint you smoked that night made it even better, whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of things. But the three bands I picked all have a good combination of all of it, where I think they have great live shows, great songs, original, decent crowds. So the first one I'm going to play is a band probably a lot of people here in Portland are very familiar with. They have got what a lot of bands don't, a really solid front man. The band is Foxy Lemon. And they always put on
friends
a killer
show.
Live show. And when you go, you know it's going to be a blast. Whether it's a house party or a Doug Fir show, Foxy Lemon will bring it.
Foxy Lemon get you pregnant.
They will. Well, that explains this.
That's a callback to their episode.
Or Scotty will with the semen sample they submitted. One of the two.
Yeah. And speaking of semen sample, this song is called Butter. I don't know if there's any relation.
My lips for your candy hips, you got me, ooh,
Hey. Oh, radio DJ show. Hey.
Yeah, you could teach us a thing or two. We don't know what we're doing.
We have no idea. Foxy Lemon, man. Great band.
It's fantastic.
We're talking about Foxy Lemon.
Big fans of Foxy Lemon. And they play a ton around. They're a fantastic live band, so definitely check
out. It's Foxy Lemon. They remind me now. So giving my age away, which I don't even mind doing because it was a good time to be alive.
28 years old.
Exactly. I used to go to these kegger parties back in the 70s. And you see, and I played in some of these house parties back in the late 70s and early 80s. And this band reminds me of those bands. Probably mostly because of the vibe of it. And the lead vocals are just that loose rock and roll show, you know. But they're just a solid band, too. They never put on a bad show. They're a good one.
And I love how, I wasn't obviously living during that era, but I love how that sound's coming back. I love the tone that they have. It does really evoke that early 70s, mid 70s kind of sound there.
And they're just super great guys too. Plus now they have Ed on drums. Do you know, and if you don't know Ed plays with Pining Hearts and a couple other bands. But Ed is a powerhouse drummer, and I love the old guy, and I really enjoyed the guy that used to be in the band, but for whatever reason they split ways. And when Ed came in, it's like, oh God, they've took it to another level. So now they're better than they were.
Yeah. That rhythm section.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's rock solid. Now, you got into music because you were a front man, correct?
Yes, for a long time.
What's your personal music story?
Where do you want it from?
What was the first show you remember playing?
First show I ever played?
Yeah.
We're talking a club or club backyard party or...
whichever you qualify it as. If it's a backyard party but you think it was a show, I'll take that one.
I have some really dumb backyard party stories, but I jammed with friends and did little stuff like that. But first club story was Gazzari's on the Strip, which isn't there anymore. Now it's the Key Club, and I think they took that down. But anyway, Gazzari's, Battle of the Bands, and I joined this band of guys from the Valley. And they kind of did Rush style, kind of like, I didn't really know who Rush was when I joined them. This is 1979, I think.
So you thought Rush sounded like them?
Kind of.
You heard it?
Sort of like that. Yeah, it was. It was like, oh, this other band, Rush,
kind of
ripping us off. But we were young. We had a 14-year-old drummer who just ripped, like Neil Peart. And first gig was at Gazzari's, and we won the Battle of the Bands.
14-year-old Japanese drummer. Yeah. And
and the band was called Myth. And
that's a solid name.
Yeah, and I've got it recorded on a cassette player.
The first show was you winning a Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, it's a Battle of the Bands. Strip. And we met some girls and kissed some girls, and it was like that was the night I knew I'm going to be in rock bands.
Yeah, you're hooked at that point.
I was hooked in.
Man, that would be the pinnacle of my music career, and it happened on the first night.
My first show and only show I was ever in a band.
You vomited on yourself and went home alone.
Four people showed up. I got too drunk, and I poured a gallon of milk in my head.
Nice.
And then I threw the remainder at this dude, and it hit him in his face and took him off of his feet. Sorry, Jake. It was pretty cool, though.
And his girlfriend was the one lady there, and she left shortly after.
We forgot all of our songs, so we just did the first two three times.
Was this at the Moda Center?
Yeah. This is a backyard party show.
Still called the Rose Garden, date us.
It was a Rose Garden. For sure. It wasn't the Rose Garden.
And you've performed?
I perform, yeah. I'm in a band currently.
What do you do, sing?
Sing and play bass.
Okay, so, story?
My very first show, I will tell you the backyard show, because the first show, I'll tell you what, the very first show I ever played was in eighth grade. It was my eighth grade graduation, and I'd made my parents, they would get me, if I did well in school, I'd get one thing at the end of the year, and I made them buy me this really cheap-ass Samick.
Blink-182.
Samick electric guitar. I don't even know if Samick is a real brand anymore. I think I paid $40 for the guitar, and I think I got hosed on the price.
Get $40 worth of use out of it?
No, I did not get 40 because I couldn't play for shit and I wasn't that interested in learning. But we played a show 2 weeks later at this end of year party in someone's backyard, and I remember I could play guitar to Wipeout. I could play the guitar, not the cool part of Wipeout, but the bam. That's what I could do.
There you go.
So that was my first show.
I could play the other part. I could do the that's all I could do. I couldn't do chords. I just read tabs, so it would just play the that part.
I think the guy who could play that part was the one who ended up making out with somebody. Not the guy who was staring at the neck of the guitar, barely playing the shitty parts that no one cares about. But it's gotten better since then. The
difference, that's good.
You know, the trajectory is up. Now, you know. Now I can play the whole thing. But so you did it for years, right? So that's kind of the start. But You did this through, what, 15 years or longer? How long were you
first
playing
band? First band, I was in the late 70s, and I broke up my last band in about 2000 and, no, not 2000, 1998 something maybe, something around there. And the last band I kept together for 10 years, but we went through five changes of members. So and I look back on it, it's really like five different bands, but they were under the same moniker, and it was this I was the singer, and my friend was the drummer.
It's so. Like Deep Purple. You were like Mark Five.
Jethro Tull. We kept it together, and we kept a few of the songs all the way through.
I think Jethro Tull's had like 75 members, which is the one dude holding on.
How many bands were you in, I guess, total?
Quite a few, actually.
What was your favorite one of them?
People get mad when Slumlord was my band. And that was the band I started. People were like Slumlord.
Pretty good name too, yeah.
But Overkill was the band I was in that would have the most success. Hmm. So, from my memories as far as rock and roll lifestyle, we did the most.
Mm-hmm.
We were in LA at a good time. I joined them
LA.
They weren't. This is a punk band. They were a punk band. I was a hair guy. I was all into glam and T-Rex and Bowie, and I went to their audition. And they said, no, we want a new image. We're going to do something different. We're going to make punk and hair bands sort of match together. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, this is right the same years when Metallica was in San Francisco. So we were in LA kind of doing what they were doing, bringing the speed. So they were a very fast punk band. And it took us a year. But at the end of that year, we were doing really well and selling out Roxy and Whiskey and playing big clubs.
Wow.
And we were locally kind of celebrities. And then we broke up. And that was that was still the best stories because I had the biggest memories of, plus I was at that age. I was 22, 23.
And those are iconic places too, like to be
so. So we were right in the midst of all of it. It was the early 80s and there was everything you imagine. It was fun. It was a good time to be there.
Now, as both a musician and as kind of a listener, you have spanned a lot of really important eras in rock music. Do you have a favorite time from kind of the late 60s that you kind of maybe grew up with? 70s had sound, 80s, all that. Is there a favorite era of rock that you gravitate to the most or strongest?
I think I have to mix it up. I don't think anything past the 80s, though, I gravitate back too heavily to. 80s has a place for me.
Yeah.
Even the stuff that I now am embarrassed to say I used to like. Sometimes I listen to Motley Crue and it's like, God, Vince is a horrible singer, but you know what? It was a great time to be around and Motley Crue was an awesome band. But yeah, now you listen to it and it's like, yeah, Vince is kind of squeaky and so I like the 80s, but 70s was big for me. That was all the Deep Purple. Like you said, the Deep Purples. Kiss was my first band. Led Zeppelin. Saw Zeppelin. Saw Kiss. All the 70s bands. So, and then the 60s, because I grew up with the Beatles. That was my weaning. My parents weaned me on the Beatles. So that's where I got all my musical influence. It's the 60s through the 80s, I guess.
It's a good run. It's probably the best run. Although I'm a child of the 90s, so I really love the 90s. But
I always, we'll sit there and go, oh, the 90s were horrible, and then we'll start talking about all the great bands from the 90s. And there were a lot of kind of great bands out of the 90s, but I think it's just the genre that people, like when they think 90s, they think a certain sound. It's like, okay, wait, you're forgetting Marilyn Manson was 90s, Garbage, Beck. There was a lot of stuff like that I thought was great.
Yeah.
That was, so it's like, no, I did like the 90s. Wait a minute, 90s was fine.
Right. Yeah, that stuff is sort of taken for granted, but in every era, there's something that no one has ever heard before that they're going to be listening to for 30 years, and you get that energy of that new era, except I guess maybe I'm out of touch now because now feels like the mainstream things seem less energetic to me now. So as music lovers and music players, I have a story that I'd like to get your opinions on.
All right.
So we were talking before the show about the shows we all saw last Friday as we're taping. And I went to see at Mississippi Studios a band that we've played on the show before, a band called Widow's Peak. I like them. They're an indie band, kind of jangly, soft, melodic. I played them on our Summer Jams episode. But their bass player had van problems. So their bass player wasn't there at the show and was driving a new van from Denver to meet them for the rest of their tour. So they just played without their bass player.
Without a bass player.
And he is a pretty pivotal part of at least what are my favorite songs. And they made a point of saying, oh, wait, I guess we just can't play this one because he's not here. What's the etiquette there? It sort of pissed me off. And it pissed me off that everybody's attitude toward that was so cavalier.
I think it's
Am
cool
I overreacting?
That they still played, man. Otherwise, it just would have been the opposite, just like no music.
I suppose, but no one even offered me my money back as an option. Because maybe I'm like, oh, I get it. Things happen, and things do happen. But maybe I would just choose to walk away from a band that can't, by definition, play the songs that I came to hear.
No, you're right on that. The etiquette seems like you should have had an option. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Thank you, Scotty.
But then you got to throw in all the ego that the musicians have, and it's like, to them, it's like, it's going to be just as good. It'll be better. It'll be, oh, man, Mach 3, you know? It's like, we're going to do a jazz interpretation of our rock hits, you know, without the bass, you know, whatever. And they may think it's worth just as much money.
Just think, in 50 years, when Widow Speak is still ripping it, he'll be like, oh, man, remember that time I saw them with no bass player?
True.
That was a weird show.
Well, here's the thing, too.
If it was the Grateful Dead and there was no Bob Weir, he just didn't show up, there would be like a coveted tape of that. Like, I had one recording.
Only in context. I don't give a shit about that.
No, live, it's not great.
I'm never going to.
It's missing something.
They've deterred me from seeing them again. I'm not even that curious. And you used the word ripped. Well, this band does not rip even a quarter as much without a backbone, you know?
Well, I read something today that they've just given up their bass player and they're just going to go straight guitar, drums, and sing.
They're just going to quietly scam people out of their money, city after city.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're Scott, cool I'm it. Glad that you are at least on my side.
I didn't say
you have some propriety.
You should have an option, exactly.
Yeah.
They were fine. I think just people should be a little more, you know, give them a little more shit. I was sort of loudly saying things that I thought were funny in response to their no baseness. So, Andy, why don't you kick a little tune for us?
Oh, man. I'm just going to throw a wrench in the mix here and play a super sad song. Anna Tivell. Or is it Tivell? I'm going to go with Tivell. That sounds better in my head.
I can't disagree with you.
I'm probably wrong.
On either the way it sounds or how it should be said.
She's an amazing folk singer, and she just kind of like... She plays in a way that just seems like she is like feeling it deep within her soul. You know, it's a cool thing to witness. And she's got a new album coming out. And by the time this airs, it will be out already. But this song, she's been playing live for a few years, and it's amazing. It's called Blue World.
You never heard, and you're riding on silver wings, and you leave in the blue world. Everything in its gentle bed, and you dreamed of a night like this, and the call of a fallen bird, and the beauty of it all is that you leave in the blue world. Tangled roots, and you leave in the blue world, and you single flame, like the candle a lover brought, just to light a beloved face. There's a shine to a night like this, and the stars never fell so near, and your soul like a golden gift, and it rises and disappears.
That was beautiful.
Definitely check out that album on Fluff and Gravy Records. They're an awesome local label that puts out a lot of cool folk music. Mike Coquindell is another one of my favorites on that label. Check him out, too. And she has a bunch of local shows coming up, playing with one of our favorite local band musicians, Taylor Kingsman.
Oh, awesome.
So check that out. Or I hope you were there in the past.
Whenever you're listening. How did you get into radio?
Wow. Okay, that's easy. Broke up the band. We're talking about bands.
This is 98. This is the last.
This is about the mid-90s. Yeah. I had no idea what I was going to do, but I broke up the band. We went through another guitar player change, and I just said, I don't want to go through another change. I'm too old for this crap. And so I was just kind of working a job, and a DJ who I knew at a local station in L.A. called KNAC, we'd been on their local show a couple of times, and so I knew him, and we were just chatting one night, and he said, you should do radio, man. He goes, you know how to talk? I was like, I said, yeah, but I don't want to go to college. You know, I got to pay bills. And he's like, no, man, you just need to be able to make tapes. So there was this cheesy little outfit in Hollywood. It was the back of the papers that say, get into radio. I went down there. I knew it was bullshit. And I asked my friend who was radio about this thing. And he goes, all you need to do is record tapes. So this place, they charge you $20, if I recall, for an hour to go in there and use their equipment. And it broadcast, I think, three blocks. You know, in downtown, but it was right in the heart of Hollywood. Nobody listened to it, but they gave me these little sheets like, here's how to sound out words and exercise. It was, I didn't care about any of that. I just went in there and started playing, and I started creating a bunch of shows. And it took me a year, but I made a bunch of tapes, and I finally went to a convention in Vegas, and I met a guy there who ended up being my first boss. So that's how I got in. I came in through the side door. I never went to college for it, I never did college radio. Mm-hmm. I just kind of created my own little weird thing, which was pretty twisted. The tapes are under my dad's house in some boxes, and one day I'll retrieve them. But I got into production, and I had a little four-track recorder, and I was playing a lot with special effects, and I was making skits, and I was doing character voices, and I was creating these little fake dramas and comedy skits that sounded like they had 10 people in them with all my different voices and sound effects. And I do these skits, and I'd put them on this radio station, and they were foul because I knew nobody was listening. So I was, you know, there was incest and there was sex in the studio, and we were doing shit with peanut butter and hot dogs, and there was a whole thing going on in there. It was not really happening. I was just sitting in the room, but it sounded like some weird orgy was going on in there.
It sounded like the early Hot Garbage episodes.
Yeah. And
only
and
it was Andy's computer.
A lot of it started.
And porn viruses.
If you mean early, you mean like 10 episodes ago?
Yeah.
My wife had given me a CD. Do you know who Russ Meyer is?
Yeah.
So he had those movies. So my wife, for some reason, got me these soundtracks from his movies. She goes, you can use them as background music. And in between, they'd have these little episodes with, like, you know, weird sex and stuff from the movies. And this one was Hot Tub Bubbling. And it was called Pool Party or something. But you hear splashing and moaning and giggling and it was like, and this horn music. And so I'd put that on behind me while I do the show and while I talk. So while I'm talking about whatever, you hear hee and splash splash, and I'd be like, hey, we're in the hot tub, you know, just goofing off. And 2 years later in the Bible Belt in Kansas, we couldn't come up with a name for the show. And as a joke around the dinner table, I said, we could always do the hot tub. And we all laughed. Oh, my God, that'd go over really great out here. But they never came up with another name. And the boss went out of town and nobody told me what else to do. So I went on as the hot tub the first day. And they came in, they said, how many calls did we get? And they were like, no, nobody. A couple of people called and said, hey, I want to get in the hot tub. And I said, see, as soon as you have a code word, that's one thing I haven't been able to do in radio since I've been in Portland. Mm-hmm. And one thing I used to really be fond of when I worked in the biz was working phones. And it's easy to get people to call. You just got to give them a reason. And it doesn't have to be shock crap or talk radio. It could just be, you know, once they know you're accessible and they'll have a conversation with you and hear themselves. And it's great. And it's fun.
And well, you enjoyed that part.
So oh, yes. Did
you like talking to people?
I did a request show in L.A. for a year. It was a simulcast in 40 markets. And I was, it was a request. It was a classic rock request. So they had to request what you had, you know.
Yeah.
But it was a fun show. I loved it. I go in live for 5 hours. And the minute I'd walk in, within the first 30 seconds, all the five phone lines would light up. And I take calls from different places and be like, yeah, I want to hear some George Thorogood. And it's like, okay, they're calling from Kentucky. I'm on in some market in Kentucky. Uh-huh. And the next call is like some guy from upstate New York. And it's interesting, you know? That's how crazy. I do the show. It was fun. I like talking to people. It's fun.
Now with the, do you still get the same satisfaction with it being in sort of internet based now?
Oh no, there's a lot sacrificed just doing what I'm doing right now, but it's okay. Just building a base for what's going to be. So, all I can do is do the best show I can.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be nice to get the phones going, and it's not impossible. But there's some limitations for sure. Absolutely, there's limitations.
What do you think is kind of the future of radio? Do you think there's always going to be a place for it? Or
I hope so.
Yeah.
Like I said before, you know, I see the towers. They're standing there. These towers are around, and no matter what they change, I think that's going to be there. In some way, they'll be utilized.
I don't know. When the apocalypse goes down, they're probably going to get scrapped to turn into spears.
Then it might be over. Then ham radio will take over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on to those ham radios.
Yeah, I got a friend who's got a whole bunch. He's also got an arsenal of weapons in Reno. So I just go there and say, dude, I don't want the guns. I just want the ham radio. I have a show to do. It's a podcast.
Have you thought about that? Have you thought about
going underground in Reno with weapons?
Yes. Yeah, right. Building a bomb shelter and talking to yourself again? No. Yeah,
I think about that often.
Do you feel like you would lose something if you went the podcast route?
I don't know if I lose anything. I just think it's different than what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 24/7 radio station that's just running 24/7, playing the music with information about the bands that are playing and where you can see them. To me, it's just a different kind of thing. It's not the same as it's not me talking. This is a talk show. That's what a podcast should be, right?
Yeah.
I don't feel like I want to talk that much, unless it's okay. As an interview podcast, I could see doing that. If I got enough to a point where there was so many interviews, it might be nice to say, hey, let's just do a podcast of the interviews.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But as far as just talking between songs, probably not.
Well, we encourage you to stay in the radio realm as a potential competitor of ours. We don't want to lose market share. but we're also a fan of not talking too much. So in that spirit, what's the second song you'd like to play tonight, Scott?
I brought a band called Trick Sensei. A lot of people haven't seen this band. They're a local band out of Portland. Just what we were talking earlier about what makes a great band. To me, very bizarre songwriting, great stage persona. It's not, I don't even know how to describe it. Weird, quirky. They think they're just a rock band. When I ask them, they go, we're a rock band. I go, yeah, you're a rock band. But I mean, Kiss is a rock band, and so are the Talking Heads.
Yeah.
They gear more toward Talking Heads in my mind a little bit.
Interesting.
They're just a little different than every other band, but they've got everything I think they need to be great. They just need to be seen and heard. So that's what Radio Hot Tub's about. So this is a band called Trick Sensei, and the song is called Alcoholic Tea. We'll be right back. Okay, so they have a theremin, man. If you got a theremin in the band, that's something right there.
It is something. It's usually a good something. Yeah. The only theremin I can think of just at the top of my mind is In Good Vibrations, and that's one of my favorite songs.
Sounds good. There's a cool theremin thing in Portishead.
People throw in the theremin.
Oh, we should get one for the studio. Be good to have that as a sound effect. Mm-hmm. Scott, occasionally we'll do this segment of our show called Scenarios in Stereo. Okay. Are you open to participation?
It involves taking our clothes off, right?
Yes.
All right.
Just for me, Nate, and Andy. Okay. But basically, I'm just going to give you a choice, a hypothetical situation, and we're just going to talk through together what your reaction to this scenario might be.
Is this some weird psychological trip, man?
It sort of is. I'm always going for something deeply scarring and difficult.
Okay, let's go.
But the first one, I think, is a little bit of a softball.
It's the Bechdel test.
In the first scenario, you have spent the last 25 years of your life pursuing a villain who's wronged you, and you have a vendetta against this man, and you've pursued him through lots of close calls and scenarios, but you finally captured him, and you're in your last act of vengeance, you're going to finally murder this man who's caused you so much pain. You've caught him. You have to do one of the two. You either shoot him in the back of the head, like gangland style, or if he's doing that, he's on his knees and he's begging for his life. He's telling you about his children, all this kind of stuff. You have to hear that. Okay. Or you are holding him underwater and watching him drown as he struggles. Which would you choose?
Man. Between those two, I think I could pretty quickly say that it would have to be the shot to the head.
Is there a particular reason? I think it's a tough call.
Oh, it's a tough call. But I think for me, just the struggle of the drowning is not appealing to me.
Okay.
And I guess there's more vengeance involved when making somebody suffer by drowning. And I'd like to think I'm not that, even though you've put me in a situation where I'm on a vendetta.
But you're the good guy in this story. You should.
I also have a sense of, you know, humanity, even in my vengeance. That's like, I will not become the evil. But I must do this for whatever reason you set me off on.
The gentleman executioner.
Yes. Yeah. Even though he's begging, it will happen, and it will happen quickly.
It's tough because
I'm on the other side of things, because as a trained mercenary, mm-hmm. I did finish that class.
I'm now an official
trained mercenary.
You got your GRE? Yeah.
GED, I guess? They call that second one a drownie, and you have to do that a lot in the camp, and it's not that big a deal.
But you're imagining that you've killed many people.
Yeah,
I'm talking about this is one person. This is the culmination of a near life's work.
Yeah, I'm saying I've been
training
my
whole life. You're probably not going to kill again.
I've done a handful of drownies, okay? I mean, this one is like the one you want to do. You don't want to shoot him.
See, in my mind, it's not a question of how the man dies, but which one do I want to do that one time? Because I can see there being advantages to the one time in my life I'm ever going to get to drown a man. Man, that's pretty hard to pass up. At the same time, how many times am I going to pop a guy gangland style with a pistol? Probably not going to do either ever again, you know, fingers crossed. Which sounds cooler to me? I don't know.
Unless you go to this camp I went to. I'll tell you about it later.
It depends on what the transgression against me was, if I'd want to just watch the life go out of his eyes as I hold him underwater.
Yeah. Man, I see where you're going. But see, my problem is I'm trying
compassion.
To put, I have to be the compassionate guy.
It's your big heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, that's fair. The second scenario for you, Scott, is you are a restaurateur, and you've opened a new restaurant. And the big secret to your success is that you've hired this chef who's famous for his stew. And here in Portland, it turns fall, gets gray, gets rainy. This is legendary stew.
This is stew country.
World-class stew, and you've got the guy. And you're so successful. One day, this chef comes to you and says, Scott, I have to tell you, try this. He slides a bowl of stew across the table. It's average. It's like, you know, it's like canned stew. Then he passes another bowl. It's delicious. And he says, Scott, the difference is I pee in these. And that's what makes it taste so good.
Very tasty.
He comes clean. And the secret to your success is his urine. Do you tell anybody or do you keep it a secret?
Well, again... My first instinct would be, yes, I'm going to get this out in the open as quick as possible because it's going to get out
eventually.
You
got to get ahead of this.
I'm going to be on it right now. I'm going to, as a matter of fact, go out and walk out arm in arm with the guy and say, I'm going to tell you what he just told me.
Mm-hmm. We're all piss drinkers.
Yes.
Man has delicious piss.
Even though the success, my conscience, again, must be clean. I would not be allowing. I would certainly. I probably wouldn't. It doesn't mean we stop doing it. Yeah. I put it on the menu. It's like this amazing.
You would just want people to have a clear head about
everybody would have to know. Dude, change the logo. There'd be a guy pissing into a bucket and smiling.
Uh-huh. Well, Andy, you've probably eaten some rat turds in your day. If you had had this stew 6 or 7 times, you've already. I mean, in for a penny, in for a pound.
I mean,
I love the stew. I've already drank the urine.
You've rolled Signed the me dice, up. And turns out it's better with it. Yeah, man.
Way better.
I don't think it's bad
me
for you.
As a, no.
Not sterile.
No. As an entrepreneur, I would say, hey, man, you got some tasty piss. Let's mix that into some hot sauce and keep it out of this average stew and charge money for the hot sauce.
Oh, I see. Well,
the vinegar kind of like
so you
will
would be
like
the opposite. I'm glad that the world is full of good. Well, I'm hoping that the world is full of good people.
Because I've heard Scotty, but on another side.
I'm afraid it's
of,
not.
No, never mind.
I think that people would be so averse, even if they had loved this stew for years, once they knew urine was in it, they'd be so averse that maybe just out of good to society, I would keep it to myself.
Yeah.
Maybe I would donate all my proceeds. Maybe I do my good work behind the scenes, and I give away my profits, my piss profits.
It'd be really suspicious that you're giving all your profits to the piss bank.
Uh-huh. Maybe
the,
I'd call
the
it
the bank where they keep all the piss samples.
Maybe I would never own up to it, but I would call the restaurant like Steamy Hot Piss Stew. And I would just sort of like, oh, it's hidden in plain sight.
I just, if you had to go things, I mean, I would buy a to go bucket of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And never eat it and just put it on top of my refrigerator.
Everybody's hungry. That's real good.
Okay.
These are great.
Well, you have not been that conflicted, actually. You've been consistently good. I've asked some tough ones, and people have let people burn to death before. People are capable.
You just caught me in a mood, man. I mean, tomorrow I might be in a shitty mood and want to kill people. I don't know.
Drown people and watch the light go out of their eyes. Okay, the last one I have. You are blessed with the ability to foresee bad things that might happen to people in the future, and because you tell them about these bad things, they're able to stop them. But to do that, you have to go up to them and either describe in vivid detail their testicles or their breasts. You can't give them any context.
The only way
you are able to help them avoid bad things in their future is by going up to them and describing either their testicles in vivid detail or their breasts. Would you do it?
I'm not even sure I understand what
I'm
doing.
Let's say we'll use Andy as an example. You see Andy, and you're struck by one of your visions.
He's going to get hit by a sheep and die.
Yes.
I'm going to walk up to him, and the only way I can save him from this...
You can't start to save his life but until you say, Andy, your nuts are...
Your testicles are brown
melting
and
wet candle
red
dripping down your leg. And they're pulsing, and they have a speckle of your own vomit on them. And you have to describe these. Or if it's a woman, you have to describe in disgusting detail her breasts.
Okay.
Would you do it?
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Okay. That was easy. I feel like it's a hard icebreaker if you're trying to convince them to believe that you can foresee the future. I think it might be tough.
Yeah, that's a weird addition to my my precognitive ability.
Oh, so wait.
I can tell you the future, but first I have to tell you about your titties.
I can't tell them that I'm going
to
tell.
But you can't even explain. You can't say, Andy, I'm going to describe your testicles. I know you don't know me, but hear me out. You just have to start doing it, and you have to hope that you can grab their attention in a way.
Or that you're so good at it, they're like, he's amazing.
Well, and again, even with that, yes. If I knew, like, if it was something horrible, and it was something I thought I should prevent, absolutely. Would I not? Sure. I'd go up and take a chance of getting slapped or punched in the nuts.
I think every once in a while, though, I'd just take a pass. Be like, nah, fuck that.
Yeah, you'll be like, it's not my problem. I don't know that person.
It's not that bad.
This sounds like it could be like a CBS television show.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
D's nuts.
D's nuts?
D's and nuts? I don't know. It was a stretch. But I don't know. Mandy Patinkin would play Uncle Scotty. And just him describing breasts and nuts.
Just walking up to people in markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that idea.
And every episode is about how you have to, maybe over the course of the 45 minutes, have to convince this woman who you've basically insulted. Verbally assaulted into believing that she's at risk for something.
Yeah. And sometimes there's fights, and sometimes I get locked in jail. And
sometimes it's breast cancer.
Exactly. And the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
And you've got to get sprung somehow.
Somebody's boyfriend has beaten me up in the alley because I talked about his girlfriend's tits. And
mm-hmm. And if you don't get people to listen, the visions become more intense.
Yeah. You're going to be swallowed by dinosaurs.
Yes. Yeah. Please, your breasts are beautiful.
They're beautiful. You're breaking the time vortex. The Tyrannosaurus is going to come to New York.
Your nipples are exquisite. Listen to me. I think it's a hit.
I think so too.
There's something in there.
Well, Scott, thanks for playing Scenarios in Stereo.
Hey, that was
you
a lot of fun.
You made it simple. You renewed my faith in humanity.
That's good. I'm glad you I'm here
you
to do that.
You wouldn't let someone burn to death in a building. Andy, who played music last? I think it's your turn, right, Andy?
I think it's my turn.
All right. Well, yes. give us something good. Don't play any of that shit.
This is a humming sound I'd like to play for you now. It goes like this.
I'm going to play you this song. Portland band Deathlist have a new album coming out that also will be out by the time this comes out. Jenny Logan, who runs X-Ray FM, is a member of that band and a bunch of other bands. She is fantastic. And this song is another one of those songs that's just, it rocks and all, but it's super personal and just like, it's just a really good song. It's called Weeks.
Deathlist.
Yeah, that's a great song.
I like how abruptly that song ends.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear clean cutoff very often.
No.
Not since the end of Side A of Abbey Road have I heard such a great cutoff. Scott, so, you know, you grew up in L.A. We're really deeply involved in that music scene. And now you've been up here helping to promote this music scene. In your opinion and your time in Portland, what do you think is unique about Northwest rock that people maybe from outside the region wouldn't think of or don't recognize?
I have ideas, but every time I think that I'm getting a Northwest feel, I go to LA or somewhere and it's almost the same, which makes me say, maybe it's not really a Northwest thing. It's just a state of music thing.
Yeah.
You know, and we just happen to be here, so it looks like it's a Northwest thing.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I wouldn't be able to classify the music very well as one thing.
Yeah.
I could certainly say what I like about Portland is the wide variety of clubs and bars and ballrooms and backyard parties and shit that people can play. Cause you can always find music here. I mean, always. And I've lived in enough places where there's no music. And it's like when you get a band, it's a cover band at the casino and you're like, God, this is my life. I hate this. I moved here. I was like, oh, I just like, I got like, I was like a crackhead. I mean, I was like, oh my God, first night, start driving around, picked up my Mercury. Let's see what clubs are around. I saw the Firkin Tavern. It said 7 o'clock free. And I said, let's go see what, I'll just go there first since it's early. Mm-hmm. And I ended up meeting Kivett Bednar. Do you guys know Kivett? He's a guitar player, plays in several bands. Anyway, he was the first guy I met, and he's how I connected with a lot of people. But again, it was just a random walking into a club. There was playing. I said, this guy's a quality talent. I got to get to know him. Pretty soon we had music on the radio. He was the first one. He was the first one from Portland that became the radio hot tub sound.
Now, when you came here to Portland, were you looking to do this project? Was this on your mind? Or
again, I already had a station running, which was a alternative classic rock station called Radio
Hot Tub. Oh, that was happening as you
moved here. I just brought it along.
Gotcha.
And then I just morphed it. Mm-hmm. So it really wasn't a plan. I wasn't sure what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But it was clear once we got once I got here, it was pretty clear. It's like, okay, there's a lot of bands. We should be able to put something together.
Oh yeah,
it's interesting too. One thing that I've noticed is in with Portland in particular, relative to other cities, even like Seattle, is that if you do what you just described, you just pick a spot, show up, and start talking to musicians, you will get plugged in. It's not really that exclusive.
Yeah,
people are pretty welcoming of. If you're enthusiastic, it's not really a big barrier to entry.
Yeah.
Which I think is unique.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Again, I have some friends who still live in LA, and I guess there's little pockets where something's going on. But to me, it just looks like a ghost town of what it was.
Yeah.
There's no Sunset Strip anymore. But I'm sure there are some great little pockets in LA that I don't know about because I'm just not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Where something cool is happening and people are probably real welcoming and super cool and, you know. But overall, yeah, I think I don't know. I've seen from genre to genre, people not really welcoming to go to other bands' shows. Or I've seen the little
people are a little reticent to blend styles.
I would like to see that change. It's a hard one to change. My hope was always that the bands, if we threw nights supported by, say, Radio Hot Tub, or if you guys did an event. You know, same thing.
It's we do.
Just come out for the radio thing or the podcast, but come out in support of just all the bands that are making this thing up.
Yeah.
Just come out as an appearance, get a beer and watch a band. It's free or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know? And when people don't do that, you have to go, what's your goal here? Because if everybody did that for each other, everybody's draw would improve, even if these bands already have a decent draw.
Yeah.
And I've found...
You will just rub off a few, even if it's just a handful of people.
I do get frustrated when I catch some bands that seem like they think they're doing good enough, and it's like, you're not doing... I mean, it depends what's good enough. If you just want to draw a decent night at the Doug Fir, and that's your goal in life, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That's going to be that.
Yeah.
But and I don't have a problem with that, but some people, I think, are trying to... They're getting a little bigger head about it, and it's like, hey, man, you're just a club band. You're a club band. Be thankful. Meet people. Come out. Meet other people. Get bigger crowds. You should sell out the Doug Fir.
Well, it's not just meeting people in order to, you know, build your local audience, but if you are ambitious, meeting people is the best way to, like, find those opportunities. Who knows what introduction is going to lead to something.
And we were talking earlier about putting together shows and having different kinds of bands on them.
Yeah.
That's another great thing, you know, just people discovering a band they never would have gone to see normally, like, oh, I don't go to that kind of show, and they just end up on a bill with the band, and suddenly they just, hey, you know what, this bass player is amazing. I've had a couple bands where I've seen, can't think of any off the top of my head, but I know there's been times when people have met at a hot tub show and then later they needed a drummer and like, oh, he joined their band.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, you know? And it's like, 'cause they would have never met, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and there's so much talent here. So it's great, you know?
And one thing I will say, I've been thinking about this a lot because it's very fashionable to shit on how Portland is changing.
Jump on that bandwagon.
Well, I'm not about to. I'm about to, you know, offer what I think is an antidote to that. Oh, one thing you can do if you're new to a place, regardless of how you're living or what changes you're witnessing, is that you can invest in that local scene. You can take a few chances to support the artistic and musical scene that really is the spirit of Portland. So they're going to build all these crappy apartments and it's going to become expensive and that's going to attract certain kinds of people. But the lifeblood of what everyone seems to like about the Portland culture
is the donuts.
Well, yeah, besides the donuts, you still have an opportunity to keep that vibrant by just checking out some live music. And if you're going to go to a bar anyway, just take a chance, go to a place you wouldn't necessarily go, like the Firkin Tavern.
Yeah.
And
so many places.
And just see what happens. Yeah. Do it once every 2 months. If that's not your thing, just start there.
Oh man, speaking of which, this is probably going to be in the past now, but somebody is doing a pretty cool thing at Star Day Tavern called Area Man, where it's just a person who lives in the area showing up and playing an improvised set of music first Thursday of every month. And there's no information. It's just like, area man plays concert. That's what it says.
Do you have to like show your ID to it's let them know you live in the area?
You
gotta
live in the 97206 area code.
Is this like it's like the Kennedy School? You can only be from the Cully neighborhood.
Yeah, to use that swamp and pool. That's what they call it, right?
And now I will complain about something because I am in Cully. I'm fucking in Cully. I live at 42nd and Prescott, but literally the lot that my apartment is on has been cut out of the map.
They won't put you in the swamp and pool?
I cannot get into the soaking pool for free.
It's bullshit.
Fuck you. That's a gerrymandering bullshit. My vote to soak doesn't count.
No, you're out of it. That's that my one street that when they asked back in the day, we're like, no, thank you. We don't like your dirty shared tubs.
Oh, it's an American Property Management.
We'll cut you out, American Property Management.
Pass. We don't want that riffraff in here. He doesn't wash his feet.
Nope. That never guy. Has. Never has.
Scott, how do you stay connected to new music now?
I thought you were going
to
say, how do you wash your feet?
Yes. Walk me through it. Step by step. I'm missing something. You know, I wear.
Why your feet smell like that?
Why can't the lint? It just seems like it's grafted to my toes. What's your secret?
It's funny you ask that. I clean my feet while I look for music.
It's clipping my toenails
with kind of a sharp cleaning object. Wand.
Yeah.
What do you do to what's your music discovery now? Are you still just going to shows as often as you ever did? You're out
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Yep.
That's the how secret, I do it. Huh? Yeah.
And people send me stuff once in a while, but most of the time it's a band I'll see. Last band was Adios Amigos. Just went and saw them at this surf night over at the Kenton Club. I went to see Outer Space Heaters, who are great. And Adios Amigos went on after them. And I was like, they just knocked my socks off.
Yeah.
And
love the Kenton Club.
Walked up to the guy, gave me a CD. I went home, loaded a few in, sent the cassette form out. Can I play your music? He said, hell yeah, play my songs. It's another part of the thing. That's how easy it is to get on Radio Hot Tub. Just consent. That's all you have to do. Yeah. Consent to whatever I say, and you can get on there. But no, there's just so much great music. That's pretty much it, though. And I'll hear stuff. And there's a few bands that are on the playlist. Probably maybe more than a few. I probably have 30 bands at least on the playlist that I've never seen. That I've heard. You know, I love the songs, but I've never seen Tango Alpha Tango. I know I love them. I know they're great. Everybody says, you got to go see this band. I was like, I want to. Just never had a chance to go see them.
Just hasn't lined up. Have you found that your own musical tastes in rock and roll have changed, evolved?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. What stage are you at right now?
Well, it's I like a lot of different stuff, but I don't know right now. That's hard because there's a lot of bands that I like in town right now but I guess the slower psychedelic stuff.
Yeah.
I just like listening to, especially from the Portland sound.
That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, there's so many good bands. Which kind of leads us to King Black Acid, which is what I brought.
Yeah, perfect segue.
So this band sent me some music. I didn't know who they were or who they'd heard about me from. But they said, hey, we've got this big band, King Black Acid. I even wrote back, I go, are you guys from Portland? I didn't know anything about them. Because I didn't live here, and I understand they had hits back in the end of the 90s, you know.
I remember seeing their CDs in Michigan at the Cool CD store.
I had no idea.
That's a cool name. I didn't ever listen to them, but I definitely looked at their CD covers.
Yeah. So I liked the music. I remember thinking, and I just thought they were a new band. And my first thought was, wow, they got it together, man. These guys are good for a young band.
Mm-hmm.
So I put some songs on, and they were playing at Mississippi, and I went with a friend of mine from a band called When We Met, and we were standing there, and the band came out. And at some point, I said something about the band, and he goes, no, they're not a new band. They've been around. That was the first time I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came out, and I was so impressed. There's so many things about this band that impressed me. But what really impressed me, let me tell you a quick thing I like about this band. This is a simple thing a band can do. These guys did one. I don't even know if they. I interviewed him. Have you guys talked to Daniel?
No.
He's a very interesting guy he's forthcoming. But anyway, when he does a show, the band comes out. They're just all standing out there between the bands. They plug their own stuff in. They're plugging in, tuning up, doing their thing. And then at one point, Daniel just comes up to the mic and he goes, all right, we're going to take 2 minutes and go get a breath of fresh air backstage. We'll be and we'll be back. And everybody kind of chuckled. Oh, what are you going to do? Woo, right? But it was funny because all it did was they got them, they walked off the stage, lights went down, put some intro music on, a little bit of fog came out, brought up some cool lights. And then we stood there for about another minute 30. And when they came back on, it was like a different bunch of people. And they were just, we knew they were the same guys that were just plugging their shit in. But suddenly they appeared like a band. Mm-hmm. They came out, they were on, they went right into it, they brought up the sound, and the room just flooded. And now when every time I go see this band, I'm like, that's a small thing. And people don't think about that. A lot of bands will get in, they'll plug in, so ready, okay, let's go. That little thing can change the minds of a crowd. So anyway, that's just one thing.
I love that. I'm stealing that.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's not a bad thing. We used to always use intro tapes. We used to play intro. We used to always plug our stuff. We used to have an intro tape back in the day. Different music. We'd pick different weird things. Have an intro music, and you put that on. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, that little minute. Then when you can come out at the end of it, people, and they get excited when they see the band walk on. It's kind of cool. Anyway.
Look at me, do a woo.
I didn't know the band very well. And at one point, they go into this song, and you'll hear it. In this song, one of the verses is, everyone knows we get high. And the whole room was high and swaying back and forth. And I thought it was the most beautiful line because it was just resonating with the room. And I looked around and I was getting a tear and a few other people were getting tears. I'm like, oh, man, we're all having a moment, man.
Everyone's eyes are just bright red.
And I was just like, this song, when I wrote to him back, I was like, "What? There's a song where you had this line." And he said it was the song called Head Full of You. So that's the one I brought from King Black Acid.
All right, let's check it out. That sounds awesome.
All right.
That was King Black Acid back there.
That's incredible. What an epic tune.
I mean, obviously, you need to be like totally inhaling bong loads at all times and listening.
It helps. Well, Uncle Scotty, thank you so much for coming on the show. We could talk to you for hours.
Yeah.
But we appreciate you coming on and sharing some.
We haven't even done the hazing.
I know. You did it. You passed. We're not legally not allowed to do that anymore. So the elephant walk has been canceled. So you dodged a bullet there.
I'll dream of it later.
But we appreciate you coming on.
We're going to need you to perform 2 drownsies.
Drownsies?
I know it's against your better nature, but you will have to submerge a man until he stops breathing.
Or two.
Hot Tub Radio is
Radio Hot Tub.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
It's a mistake, but yeah, I have to like spank that one, right?
Yeah, of course radio you do. Yeah, you should smack me directly in the face.
Because somebody radio shall go to Hot Radio Tub or something and never find it.
Well,
Shot Tub.
Let the people know what the best and easiest way to listen and follow what you're up to is.
Just go to RadioHotTub.com. It's all there. There's several players on there. You can download apps if you want, create an app. Plus, we're on 90.3 Freeform Portland. But anyway, all the details, Facebook, find Radio Hot Tub, Instagram, Radio Hot Tub PDX. Always be pimping whatever's going on. So if we're playing or doing a show or there's a gig,
incredible,
you'll find out about
it. Incredible live shows. So please go to RadioHotTub.com. Listen to Scott and check out the bands live. Check out bands. That's really the project that we're all here
check
to share.
Out bands.
Check out
check
bands.
Check
out bands.
Out bands.
Well, thanks again, Scott. We really appreciate
thanks,
you coming
guys
on the show. And thank all of you for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. We deeply appreciate it. If you like what you heard and are already a subscriber, please pass along the info to your friends. We would really appreciate that. You can tell them that they can subscribe through iTunes. The show will come to them every week, usually on Fridays. If you like what you heard and you're already telling a friend, you might as well go ahead and go to iTunes yourself, throw us some stars, and maybe leave us a comment so other people can find the show. We'd appreciate it. If you want to talk to us directly, you can do so via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's HAUTE, garbagepodcast@gmail.com.
And if you're freaky, come find me at hergarbage
on Instagram. Andy? I know you're freaky. What are you taking us out on this evening?
Oh, man. I'm going to go in the not freaky direction and play some bluegrass.
Oh, nothing less freaky than bluegrass.
No, this is a band called Out West that I've been really digging lately. And they put out this album called The Tabor Tapes. And this song is pretty much exactly what I'm up to these days. It's called I Don't Do Drugs.
For Scott Hamm.
Keeping it clean. I'm not a pervert.
Are you a Tommy Dutree now?
For Scott Hammond of Radio Hot Tub. For Nate, for Andy, this is Drew. We will see you next week on Hot Garbage.
Yeehaw!
Sauce anymore. I don't hit the sauce anymore. I'm a little bit less crazy and my night's no longer hazy. I don't hit the sauce anymore. Strangers' beds, and my wife still gives me headaches. I don't sleep around anymore.